Welcome to the South Shore's Morning News Weekend Review Podcast. I'm Rob Hackelall. Listen for the next 30 minutes as we take a look back at some of the big interviews from the week on the South Shore's Morning News, which airs live weekdays from 5 to 10 a.m. I'm Rob Hackelaw with the morning team. Well, as promised in this segment, joining us this morning, we have military historian and New York Times bestselling author Adam Makos on the line. We're going to talk about an amazing story. His book is A Higher Call, an incredible true story of combat and chivalry in the war-torn skies of World War II. Adam, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Rob. Thanks for having me on your show.
Great to have you on the program. I understand that there is a new Apple TV Plus series called Masters of the Air, a drama series by the producers of Band of Brothers and the Pacific. And some of the events, in fact, there was the 100th Bomb Group, the brotherhood that inspired this series, Masters of the Air. So tell us a little bit about your book and your research and what led you to that.
Well, Rob, the air war over Europe that we see in that TV series is shocking and it's violent, and it really happened. I was fortunate to write a book about the one moment of mercy, the one gem, the shining light in all those horrors. It was about the time when a 21-year-old American B-17 bomber pilot was just trying to get his plane home. He had wounded men aboard. His name was Charlie Brown. And he was the real Charlie Brown, the original Charlie Brown. And his crew was, he had dead men aboard, wounded. And he made one mistake that day as he was trying to get back home. He flew over a German airfield. And on that airfield was a German fighter pilot named Franz Stiegler. And Franz was duty-bound to shoot down this bomber. And what happened that day, it was a one-of-a-kind, kind of a, I don't want to say a freak show moment of World War II, where Franz took off, chased the bomber down, and when he got up behind it, he couldn't bring himself to shoot it down. Instead, he ended up escorting it out of Germany to spare the lives of those Americans.
Wow. And a moment that, in fact, couldn't be talked about or spoken about for many years?
Exactly. That's exactly right. What happened was when Charlie Brown got his bomber back to England, he told the intel officers, hey, I was spared by a German fighter pilot. And at first they were going to give him a medal. And then once they ran it up the flagpole, the brass came back and said, put a lid on this story. It's 1943, and we can't have the American public thinking that there are good Germans out there.
Yeah.
And so Charlie's mission was classified secret. He couldn't talk about it anymore. And it wasn't until 1990 that he decided he's going to search the world for the German who saved his life. And he found Franz Stiegler, and they became fishing buddies.
That is an amazing story. And the most amazing part about it is true. And Adam, so in this book here as well, you have some amazing photos. So talk about the research that went into this project for A Higher Call.
Well, Rob, my grandfather was a B-17 radio operator, so he got me interested in all this stuff when I was just a kid, and so I spent much of my youth interviewing World War II veterans. To write this book, though, it was a real challenge, because when I first contacted Charlie Brown, I said, Mr. Brown, I'd love to interview you and tell your story. And he said, Adam, I've got to stop you right there. He said, you're doing this the wrong way. He said, I'm just a character in this story. The hero is the German, and if you'd like to talk to him, I'll set it up. And so, Rob, I ended up, I was probably 23 years old at the time. Mm-hmm. I got on a plane, flew out to Vancouver, Canada, and sat down with Franz Stiegler. And that's where I learned that just because he flew for the other side didn't make him an evil person. And so that was the start of the research. But I also ended up flying a B-17 bomber and going over to Germany and going over to England and going to all these places where it was set to really understand what these guys went through.
Yeah, it's so amazing, these stories that came out of World War II. And I know it's very true that many of the people that were there did not want to tell their stories. I think about my own grandfather, Adam, and I wish I had a chance to really talk to him more about that when he was alive. All I really know about was he, you know, mentioned being in Europe and in the area going into Italy, and I don't know too much about his stories. But I think about all the individuals that were there, whether it be Europe or the Pacific or elsewhere, and how you went into the bomber to get that perspective, right? Tell us what that was like, to imagine what it must have been like for those young men.
Well, that's the one thing, Rob, that I when I watched the Masters of the Air show, it's the CGI is very good, but I think nothing will ever give us the experience that those guys had, which is if you take an aircraft up to 26,000 feet and open up the windows. That's what these guys did. You know, they'd be up in those bombers, temperatures negative 20, negative 30 degrees below zero. And the wind is coming through the open windows in the waist and in the radio compartment of the aircraft. I mean, these guys were literally sticking guns out into the freezing air. And then, you know, to speak to the what Franz Stiegler did, it was his job to get in this little fighter and to fly right at these big, heavily armed machines. And so these guys were clashing in the heavens, and it produced these aerial battles that, you know, they're as scary as jumping out of a plane over Normandy on D-Day.
Wow. And so, obviously, you mentioned the U.S. wanted to keep a lid on this. I imagine, obviously, the Germans at that time, what would they have done to Franz for not shooting down that plane?
You're exactly right. Franz would have been considered a traitor in the eyes of his country. So when he flew back after sparing that bomber, a mechanic asked him, "So did you shoot it down?" And he said, "Oh, no, it got away." You know, this is after, you know, the city of Hamburg had been flattened by 8th Air Force bombers. It had been firebombed. And so you've got German cities being erased from the map one after another. And so to go and spare an American bomber and then let that American bomber crew come back and bomb your country again, it was an incredible moment of humanity. And it, partially because Franz Stiegler never really wanted to be a fighter pilot. He joined because his own brother had been killed in the Battle of Britain, and he wanted revenge. So the story is very much about a guy going in wanting revenge and then figuring out, you know what, we're all humans and none of us want to be here. And so it's a story that really hits hard.
Adam Makos has been with us. He's got to run. But, Adam, thank you so much for being with us on WATD.
Great talking with you, Rob.
Great talking with you, Adam Makos. He's got a lot of other interviews to do. The name of the book is A Higher Call. It's one of the best-known books about World War II bombers in Europe. And according to the LA Times, Makos has been called one of the top military writers. And we had him on today to kind of recap the book because of the new Apple TV Plus series, Masters of the Air, that new drama series. And the Masters of the Air premiered, I believe, on January 26th. And we'll be airing new episodes throughout the winter on Apple TV Plus. Masters of the Air is the name of that series. And if you want to find out more about Adam Makos in the book A Higher Call, an incredible true story of combat and chivalry in the war-torn skies of World War II, go to Adam's website. That's ADAMMAKOS. Adam Makos. ADAMMAKOS.com. Adam Makos. South Shore's Morning News continues. I'm Rob Hakala with the Morning Team. Every week at this time, we check in with our tech guy, David Snell, who joins us from Act Smart IT in Wareham, actsmartit.com. David Snell, good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Rob.
All right, well, let's dive in here. This is quite the interesting topic about OpenAI releasing its AI text-to-video generator. Okay, so tell everyone about this story.
So we actually, if you've been watching the news the past couple of days, last Thursday they released or introduced a product named the Sora, S-O-R-A. And it is a text-to-video generator with beautifully, shockingly realistic videos showcasing today's AI model's capabilities. It's able to generate complex scenes with multiple characters, specific types of motions, and accurate details. So it's very interesting. The challenge is, though, that it's going to be used for things that we may not want it to be used for, like deepfake videos and things that would get people in trouble.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to, because I think I saw a few of them online, David, and it looks so realistic that I feel that the human eye can no longer distinguish what's real and what's fake. Remember how you used to be able to tell those edits and some of those, you know, the computer, you know, the person moving their mouth, but it's fake, it's kind of dubbed in. But now I can't tell, and not only is it can be the video, but it's even the voice in many cases.
Exactly. There have been instances recently where they have taken a person's image and their voice and created and generated video. And one person, for instance, got a video showing his friends that they were being held hostage, and he sent $25 million to rescue them. And it was a fake video. It was an AI deepfake.
Wow. But most people would believe this until we can finally get up to speed. And it's going to take most of us, and I imagine most of you out there listening, when you see these videos online, it's very believable. And that can cause people to take action or feel a certain way when they in reality don't need to.
Exactly right. And we as the consumer of these videos need to be more careful with what we see, believe, and share. And there are ways to tell if any of these videos are in fact generated by AI today. But I expect that to go away as the technology improves. For instance, if you look at some of the videos that we put links up to, you'll probably see that there are disappearing artifacts or objects in the background. People are walking in perfectly aligned steps. And that's not what happens when you have 50 people walking down the street.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's things like that that you need to look for. But I'm sure that that's going to go by the wayside as they continue to improve the technology. So right now, OpenAI, our ChatGPT heroes, are worth $80 billion, which is three times what they were worth 10 months ago.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
And software now is outpacing today's hardware. So OpenAI is in talks with chip makers and energy providers to drive new AI tools and looking for another $100 billion in funding. Once this is on a chip and not just a piece of software, most of these problems are going to go away, and we'll have to use some type of application to actually run a video through to see if it's true or fake.
Wow. So OpenAI definitely seems like that is the growth area, and that's where the investments are going to go into, right?
Absolutely. Especially when they start increasing chip making, they want to do it on this continent, so that's a good thing.
Okay.
But, you know, at least it's being done here in the United States. But the challenges are going to be that the better they become, the harder it's going to be for us to recognize that what we're looking at is generated or real.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and that's the main concern, because already with social media, even when videos were real, but we only saw a snippet of a real video, we didn't know the full story, we've already seen the issues that can happen when people will either attack a person or an organization or a company, and because we feel that we have the story, but in reality we don't. And you certainly have to be careful about that when it comes to politics. I just think about how, you know, close, you know, sometimes it seems like a powder keg and you just need something to make it go off. And this could be one of the things.
Exactly. So the OpenAI says it's building tools to help detect misleading content. We'll see if that gets put in place quick enough and then see how the application can actually get around those things. So it's interesting. Now, at the end of our post here, I put up a 20-minute video. And if people want to learn a little more about this, it talks about what they believe are the 10 stages of AI.
Mm-hmm.
And when you walk through it, we're at stage five, and it's taking about 10 years to get to that stage.
Stage five of 10.
Stage five of the 10. So that's been about 10 years. But my estimation is that this is going to grow exponentially, like everything in technology, and we should be at stage 10 within 2 to 3 years.
Wow.
And stage 10 looks pretty scary to me. I don't know.
Well, it does. It basically has AI exploring the universe and all the quantum realities that exist.
Exactly. And on its own.
Yeah. I mean, we're done. But at that point, I don't know. But I just always wonder if something has advanced and this was the logical way, you know, why I guess we were waiting to be visited by spaceships. Why maybe we're going to be visited by AI.
That would probably be first, and then they'll bring the aliens back down to us.
Oh,
I don't know.
If we're even around anymore, I have no idea.
It can only be attributable to human error. The 9000 series has a perfect operational record.
Oh, thank you, HAL 9000. Yeah, you know, that was pretty scary, but he's going to be real. But then if you go to state, if you watch this video, David, it is it's pretty scary. Now, in the meantime, let me ask you this question. Could the AI be used for good? I mean, I guess if there are bad videos being created, could the AI tell you this is a fake?
Yeah, no. Well, they're working on those tools, but AI can be good. As a matter of fact, exceptional in some instances. For instance, you can use AI to do complex surgeries on us, on humans, that a surgeon may not feel comfortable in his skill set to do it with.
Yeah.
So if you trust the AI and you trust the computers holding that scalpel, then I think it's a great thing.
Yeah. No, it can be. And I watched the video that you sent, by the way. And can people see that in the link too, David?
They can, yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, I watched the video and it talks about, you know, and yes, I mean, it says that the AI could be smarter than all the potential intelligence of every human that ever lived, which is scary to think about. But then it does allow you to say that, yes, maybe you could cure disease or other issues or solve any environmental problems or power issues and that kind of thing. But at the end of the day, you wonder if the AI will want that and would want to do that for us.
Exactly. There may come a point, and I hope it doesn't happen, that the AI just does what it wants to do, no matter what we try to program it to do.
Yeah. Whew, boy. Okay, so here we are. Just remember this conversation. It's February 2024, let's date it, and we'll find out what happens in the next few years. But in the meantime, we're at stage five. David Snell, where do people need to go to read more?
Go to actsmartit.com, click on my blog link, and we'll keep our finger on the pulse of this as it moves forward.
Thank you so much, David. Actsmartit.com. Thank you, David.
Have a great day, Rob.
You too. This is South Shore's Morning News. Great to have you here. And as promised, we have a local author in studio. This is his first children's book. And I know it's a topic many of you will enjoy, especially you, Christine, as you have a love of dogs. It's called The Adventures of Duke, based on the true story of how a homeless street dog in Puerto Rico became a registered therapy dog who has touched the lives of so many. And we have the author in studio. He is certified professional dog trainer and motivational speaker, Ken Brady. Ken, good morning.
Morning, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming into WATD this morning to talk about your first children's book, The Adventures of Duke. This is based on a true story. So why don't you fill us in on the story? Obviously, you are someone that works with dogs. That is your profession. So tell me how you and Duke came to know each other.
So Duke, as you said, started out in Puerto Rico, homeless, starving, and sadly had a collar that had become embedded in his neck. He was rescued by a local rescue agency. They were able to do surgery on him, get the collar out of his neck, sent him up to me. Mm-hmm. As a trainer, I then trained him. We had him registered as a therapy dog, and now we travel to schools, hospitals, nursing homes, or anywhere that, you know, need some sort of comfort.
Mm.
And I just felt like his story is really important.
Well, it is an amazing story, as Duke had quite an ordeal and had a life. As you said, he almost didn't make it.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that we talk about quite a bit is, you know, the way he overcame adversity, the way, you know, one of the things that I talk about when we go to schools and especially elementary schools is showing kids his story, and that the first chapter of his life didn't have to dictate his entire life. Mm-hmm. And so he overcame what he went through, and now he spends his life giving back, you know, and, you know, providing happiness and comfort everywhere he goes. And it just, it's funny because I talk all the time about, as a dog trainer, what I try to teach dogs.
Yeah.
But really with Duke, it's a lot about what he taught me.
Well, this is going to be a children's book. I think many of you will enjoy some amazing illustrations here. Tell me about the story about the illustrator, because this is a friend of yours. He did some amazing illustrations in this book. I think you can see even a representation of your family.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm originally from Weymouth, graduated from Weymouth South High School in 1988, and a very good friend of mine, his name's Jim Gross, graduated a year ahead of me. We were very good friends in high school.
Yeah.
So when I got the idea for the book, I sent Jim a message knowing that he's an illustrator, and I asked him if he had ever done a children's book, and he hadn't, but he said, you know, I've always wanted to do a children's book. So we were able to collaborate, worked with our publisher, and his illustrations are just...
Yeah.
Amazing.
No, it really, I mean, when I opened the book, first of all, Ken, the book looks amazing. I love the color and the way, look at the photo of how Duke just kind of pops off out of the book. And it just seems so alive with these illustrations.
Yeah. One of the things that Jim did really well was when we sat down to talk about the book is that every page or every story in the book is about an emotion. Yeah. And Jim would say, okay, in this scene right here, the emotion is, you know, fear. Or in this scene here, the emotion is happiness. And he was able to sort of bring that to life through the way that he drew the characters in the book. And it's something that, for me, it just blew me away. Mm. It was stunning.
Now, we're talking about Duke, the... a dog who was rescued, a homeless street dog in Puerto Rico, now a registered therapy dog, and has touched the lives of so many. And Duke has now made himself permanently onto the pages of this new book, The Adventures of Duke, where he will live on forever. So tell me about you and Duke and what your adventures typically entail.
So personally, what we like to do, we do, yep, a lot of hiking, a lot of, you know, I like to do some trail running with him. I've even taken him skiing where we hike up the mountain.
Duke skis.
Almost. Oh, okay. But I will ski and Duke will essentially chase me down the mountain running,
wow,
after me.
Wow.
So those are our personal adventures, our professional adventures. Yep. We love going to schools, like I said, hospitals, nursing homes. We went to a school last week called the South Shore Educational Collaborative, which is a school for children with some significant emotional or medical challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And to see their faces light up, mm, when Duke walked in the room and sort of he'll go over and lay his head on their lap or, you know, lay down next to them while they're able to pat him. And those are the things that just, you know, I can't put a price tag on what that means to me, you know, to see him do that.
Ken, you grew up in Weymouth. Mm-hmm. You live on the South Shore now in the Plymouth area.
Yep.
Have you always had dogs growing up?
Yeah, yeah. I always say, like, I'm a dog guy. You
okay.
Know? I've always had dogs, and it was about 20 to 25 years ago that I got a German Shepherd, took him to a trainer, learned how to train, mm-hmm, and really enjoyed it. And so eventually I decided that that's something I want to do. Went to a school out in Ohio called the National Canine School for Dog Trainers, mm-hmm, became a certified trainer, and then opened my own business, and I've been doing it ever since.
Wow. Talk about how important therapy dogs are. Explain to the audience, maybe, because this is something obviously we didn't hear as much about, you know, when you and I were growing up. Can, mm-hmm, you tell us about the therapy dogs and the real difference that they make in today's world?
So therapy dogs, what they're essentially for is they provide comfort to anybody, whereas, you know, a service dog is a dog that's trained to do something for one individual.
Okay.
Therapy dogs, I always say, are for everybody. And many studies have shown that the presence of a calm therapy dog can lower heart rates, can the medical I guess
you're right. The data and the research has shown that it really does make mm-hmm. a difference. I mean, yes, anecdotally, you think, sometimes just petting the dog or having the dog near you. Mm-hmm. But the data proves that we've seen the levels, right? It does
absolutely.
Make a difference.
Absolutely. And that's why, again, like the school we went to last week, that what it did for those kids to have that moment of this dog, where a lot of these kids don't ever get to experience that.
Yeah.
Or we have victims of trauma, mm-hmm. And just spending a little bit of time sitting on the floor, petting a dog, it can be amazing what it does for somebody's physical health and their mental health. And for me, Duke's the best at it. I've never seen a dog like him. I know everybody thinks their dog is the best, and they're right.
Yeah.
But he is incredible, the way he will just sort of, curl up next to you and, he just gives himself, just as a way to help. And it's amazing to watch.
Oh, that's amazing. And Duke is here. Think about the story about, how he almost didn't come here. He was rescued and now has this new life here in America. And how old is Duke?
Duke is about 9.
Yeah,
he's about 9 years old. I've had him for 8 years. When I got him, the estimation was that he was about a year old.
Yeah.
We don't truly know. So we always say I got him in April. So we always say his birthday is in April.
Yeah.
But, he's aging very well. He's not getting gray yet. He's still very active. He likes to walk and run. And his story of survival really, it inspires me.
Yeah.
It really does. And it sort of changed the way I look at life.
Well, we want people to pick up the book here. This is a children's book, The Adventures of Duke by Ken Brady. And so tell us, how can listeners get the book and order it and read it for their kids and grandkids?
So right now it's available online. You can go to BrileyBaxterBooks.com. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it on Barnes & Noble. Our cover reveal Sunday is this Sunday, where you can pre-order the book, and then you'll get it on March 12th, which is the official launch date of the book. But truthfully, you could go on today and you could order it, and then you'll get the book on March 12th. And a really big thing that happened today, I woke up this morning to a couple of emails where the book has already been nominated for a Reader's Choice Award as well as a New England Authors Award.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
That's
going to be some great news to wake up to.
Yeah, that was a good day.
Ken Brady is in studio, The Adventures of Duke, and this is the real story here. It's based on the true story of how a homeless street dog in Puerto Rico became a registered therapy dog and has touched the lives of so many. Certified professional dog trainer Ken Brady has been in the studio this morning. The Adventures of Duke.
Duke is what I would call a medium dog. He's about 60 to 65 pounds. He's a black mouth cur, which is truly not even a recognized breed. It's sort of a glorified mutt.
Okay.
But they're generally used as hunting dogs down south.
Oh, okay. Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Duke is the dog, and it's The Adventures of Duke, Ken Brady, and you can order it online. Ken, thank you for coming in. Good to see you again. He is a certified professional dog trainer and now children's author, and who knows, you're going to write another book now, you're thinking?
Yeah, I got to start the second adventure now.
I know. Once it's underway, there's
a
lot of fun adventures for Duke. Okay, well, we'll have you back. Thanks,
Sounds
Ken.
Sounds great, Rob. Thanks for having me.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. As always, you can find us on your radio at 95.9 FM, mornings from 5 to 10, or online at 95.9watd.com.
And you can catch up with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can get the links at 95.9watd.com/SS Morning News. And join us next week for another edition of the South Shore's Morning News Week in Review.